Good evening, everyone. I'm Lily Normoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. February 6 marks the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation, also called Female Genital Cutting. The United Nations is calling for a complete end to FGM. Victims and medical experts say the harmful practice leaves women and girls with short and long-term physical and psychological damage. Female genital cutting comprises all procedures that involve altering or harming the female genitalia for non-medical reasons. We will discuss this topic on today's program. And joining us live via phone from Centerville, Virginia, outside Washington, D.C., is Angela Peabody. She is president and founder of the Global Woman Peace Foundation. Ms. Peabody, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great. We are glad you can join us today. Also joining us via phone from Alicante, Spain, is best-selling and award-winning author Lucinda E. Clark. She is the author of the suspenseful literary fiction, Amy Cut for Life. Ms. Clark, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for asking me.
Fantastic. We appreciate your time. So we will start discussing this topic of female genital mutilation or cutting, as some other people will say, in a moment. But first, VOA's reporter Amy Yee looks at some efforts to spot the practice in Ethiopia. Take a listen.
Ethiopian nonprofit KMG started educating people about the harmful effects of female genital mutilation in the southern region of Kambata Tambaro in 1998. Bayebo Erisado, a 50-year-old farmer and village elder, says at first he did not believe what he heard. He says, "No, we've been doing it a long time. It can't be harmful. It's our culture. We're doing it to benefit the girl." The procedure can cause hemorrhaging, scarring, infections, and psychological trauma. In Kambata, the practice commonly took the form of cutting off the clitoris and the inner and outer labia. This can cause major health problems, especially during childbirth. Erisado estimated it took 4 years for his community to start changing its attitude toward FGM. As a village elder whose opinion is respected, he played an important role. The shift happened through the work of KMG. The core of its work is holding community conversations. The groups of 50 include people from all walks of life, men and women, young and old, elders and laborers. KMG facilitators guide regular meetings where people discuss issues until they reach consensus. When KMG started out, issues such as women's rights were abstract concepts to struggling poor people. So it addressed day-to-day needs, such as repairing broken bridges and addressing HIV and AIDS. Over time, even taboo subjects such as FGM and gender violence were discussed openly. Since beginning its work, the prevalence of FGM in Ethiopia has dropped to 65%. In recent years, compared to 74% more than a decade ago, according to a government report. The United Nations Population Fund credits KMG with a big reduction in the practice. KMG was founded by 63-year-old Dubogelech Gebre, who grew up in Kambata Tambaro and was cut as a girl. During her childhood, girls were not expected to go to school. Gebre, however, went on to study biology at universities in Israel and in the state of Massachusetts in the United States as a Fulbright Fellow. Gebre says including people in community conversations and letting them reach their own conclusions was critical in changing deeply rooted practices.
We don't dictate, we just discuss, we facilitate, we allow them to talk. In that conversation, nobody is wrong, nobody is right, nobody is better knowledgeable than the other. Every single one has spoken in that group has value. There's no judgment, and that makes people comfortable to speak their mind. Women, for the first time, you know, learn that they have something of value, that people listen to them.
People became aware of the health risks of FGM, and they learned there is no religious basis for it in the Bible or Quran. Those ideas were absorbed by the next generation of women and men. Mehrun Abebe was a boy when KMG started working in Kambata. He says he remembers community conversations about FGM. He says, "Now the community has accepted the change. KMG has been successful because it's working closely with society. They are not coming in and saying, do this, don't do that. They just facilitate the community to identify its own problem, discuss the problem, and provide solution." KMG has since expanded, and most of its work is now outside Kambata in neighboring regions. Today, nearly 4 million people benefit from KMG, and thousands of Ethiopian females have been spared. Amy Yi for VOA News, Kambata Tambaro, Ethiopia.
Ladies, again, thank you so much for joining us. I will start with you, Ms. Angela, to have your reaction on the report that we heard. We see that there is an organization that making really are fighting in Ethiopia to stop the practice. You know, one of the things that really touched me when I was listening to the report is something that one of the gentlemen said early on. He said, we have been doing this for a long time. It cannot be harmful. We do it to benefit the girl. What is your reaction, Miss Angela?
In fact, I made a note of that when I was listening to it. What benefit could the girl have from it? And his idea of, he said something about it's our culture and it's our tradition and we've been doing it a long time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean that, it doesn't justify cutting girls and risking their lives. A lot of them end up dying from it just because it is a long time tradition. And he said, I'm glad that he changed his mind. I was happy to hear a man saying, well, now I have a different outlook on it. And that's the importance of us educating the public and speaking to the world, like, for instance, today being Zero Tolerance Day internationally for FGM. I think it's important for us to continue to drive the nail home on this topic, because more men getting involved is very important for the campaign against it.
Absolutely.
And I applaud KMG for the work that they are doing in Ethiopia.
Let me mention that you are originally from Liberia, and Liberia is one of the countries that practice FGM, and we will definitely come to that. Let me talk to you, Ms. Lucinda, and ask you. You are a native, originally a European, and you've lived in Africa, and you have written in a book, Amy Cat for Life, the story of a fictional character that has experienced FGM. First of all, as someone who has not, who have not been familiar with the practice before, who has not definitely not undergone through the practice, why was it important for you to look to join your voice and your talent to this cause?
I feel very strongly about it because it is brutality against women, it is gender suppression, and it of the extreme. And I think my current feeling at the moment was there has been a lot going on in Hollywood and other places about various people being accused of doing this, that, and the other, and using their power to subjugate women. Mm-hmm. And that is pretty appalling. But one step even further than that is actually physically mutilating a young girl.
Yeah, and using the word mutilation has been so controversial in the beginning. I remember when people were addressing FGM because they said in some communities they do not consider it being mutilation. So to be politically correct, we were to use female genital cutting, which I still use sometimes in my broadcast. So, Ms. Angela, what is your take on using mutilation or cutting in general?
Well, I use mutilation a lot when I do presentations from my organization, as well as when I write articles. I use the word mutilation, and it's because beside my personal feeling about the word, most of the survivors of FGM they take offense if you use the word cutting, because they believe that it lessens the magnitude of it. Mm-hmm. Yes, the word cutting makes it seem like, oh, it's just a nick on the finger in comparison, or it's similar to male circumcision, which it is totally different, as you all know. So I prefer to use the word mutilation. And to be politically correct, like you always say, it depends on the audience to whom I'm speaking, I'm addressing, then I use cutting if I know that mutilation will offend that audience.
Absolutely. Now, Ms. Lucinda, today marks the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. What is the significance of this day to you?
Hopefully to raise awareness. I have been putting on Facebook and all the other and my blog to just tell people what it's about, what's going on. I've written about a lot of things that I experienced in Africa, and a lot of feedback I've had from readers is that they just don't believe me. They say, no, people don't do that, or this doesn't happen. And I've said, well, actually, it does. But this particular FGM took me far by surprise. I didn't realize it was quite as prevalent as it is. Mm-hmm. So if people know about it, they can at least suggest they can talk about it. And especially if it comes to places like states where they have not made it a felony, to perhaps lobby and say, let's make sure it's totally illegal everywhere in the Western world where we don't normally practice it.
And Miss Lucinda just said that she did not realize that it was so prevalent. One thing with on the African continent, the practice is real in almost 30 countries. And the irony is most countries, if not only three of them, it's illegal in most countries, except for three of them, if I'm correct. However, and Liberia just joined the bandwagon, and I wanted to have your reaction, because this is something timely. It just happened as President Johnson Sirleaf was stepping down. She signed an executive order to make it illegal, to ban the practice, which is valid for 1 year. What is your reaction as an advocate, as someone from Liberia, a woman who has been voicing your concern for so many years?
Well, when it comes to Liberia, I'm very sensitive about FGM. The fact that we had a woman president for 12 years, for a dozen years in office, and she did absolutely nothing. And I will give her a little bit of credit. She went to the UN General Assembly a few years ago, and she did promise to go back to Liberia and ban the practice. Well, she went back to Liberia. She did put forth a bill to her legislature to ban the practice. They passed everything else in the bill, all of the clauses except for FGM. The FGM clause, they extracted it from the bill and passed it. And so FGM remained legal in Liberia without a law. And during that time, a 16-year-old girl lost her life last year because of FGM. There were so many other incidents that happened. A 40-year-old woman was attacked and brutally beaten, and her back was slashed, and she was forcibly they forcibly did FGM to her. She managed to escape, and she came to the U.S. And appealed to Global Woman Peace Foundation. So all of those things happened during the time Mrs. Johnson Sirleaf was debating with her legislature. And the reason why Liberia was so hesitant to pass the law against FGM is because most of the members of the legislature in Liberia are members of the Poro Society. The Poro Society is the male society to the Sande Society. The Sande is for the women, and the Poro for the men. And the Sande is the society that actually practices FGM. They lead the practice in that country on FGM. So I believe that Mrs. Johnson Sirleaf was trying to appease her legislators. She was trying to appease the women who practice it, the masses, so that because she knew she needed their support during her presidency and she needed their votes. So at the last hour, the evening before the new president was sworn into office, Mrs. Johnson Sirleaf decided to sign several domestic violence executive orders, and FGM happened to be one of the executive orders she signed, and that is only good for 12 months, for 1 year, and then the new president can decide to either overturn it or to continue it and to execute it. So FGM, still, there's nothing to celebrate right now in Liberia when it comes to FGM and the executive order that was signed. Yes, somebody said to me recently, oh, we have to take baby steps. But when it comes to FGM, when a girl dies under the knife or under the blade of FGM, by her exciser, that is not baby steps. They are not waiting. Death is not waiting for baby steps to be taken. So I think I just do not have any accolades there for the president, the former president's actions.
We understand your position, and let me just say that we do not have anyone from the Poro Society or the Sande Society to react. Neither do we have Mrs. Sirleaf also to react, but hopefully we can definitely follow up on this. And from what you're giving us as your reaction, we really see that this is a topic, a matter that is very, very personal and personal to your heart, close to your heart. Now, there are some people that are saying it is true that this executive order came at the last minute, but it is a step in the right direction, and it really is a way for people to get the conversation going. And perhaps it is a kickoff, a good started point, and perhaps the new president will pick it up from there and continue in this direction to protect women and girls in Liberia. So we really appreciate your feedback on this, and we will definitely keep a close eye on developments in Liberia on what is being done with this executive order after 1 year, most definitely. So now we are going to take a short break and continue this very, very interesting discussion. When we come back, Ms. Lucinda, we will get from you a little bit about what your book is about and more. So don't go away. We'll be right back. It's now time for the news with Imutinyan Ujabwe.
Female genital mutilation survivors are urging people to use the MeToo hashtag when posting about practice on social media on February 6, the annual International Day of Zero Tolerance for FGM. According to UN data, at least 2 million women and girls globally have undergone female genital cutting, the ritual involving partial or total removal of the external genitalia. It's practiced in about 30 African countries and parts of Middle East and Asia. Countless women and girls have taken to social media in recent months using the MeToo hashtag to talk about their experiences of sexual harassment, abuse, and rape. FGM survivors say the practice is a form of sexual violence and should be part of the MeToo campaign. The World Health Organization has urged the adoption of healthy lifestyle as a way to lower cancer risk. WHO also emphasizes that early diagnosis and treatment for cancer can save many lives. Cancer is the second leading cause of death globally. It kills nearly 9 million people every year. The international health bodies say tobacco use is the most important risk factor, followed by alcohol use, unhealthy diet, and lack of physical activity. Experts say 70% of cancer's death in low and middle income countries, while the number of cases in these countries is still increasing at fast and worrying rate.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing female genital mutilation. My guests are award-winning author Lucinda E. Clark and Angela Peabody. She's president and founder of the Global Women Peace Foundation. Now, Miss Lucinda, you wrote a book, Amy Cat for Life, that talks about the issue of FGM. Can you briefly tell us about the story?
I think the idea came from reading that children were being sent from Britain out to their countries of origin to be cut during the summer holidays so that they would have a chance to heal before they get, the next school term started. So my heroine, who is based in Africa, I write about Africa, I was there for over 30 years, I'm familiar with a lot of things, you know, obviously over that time, and the four children, she comes across them in the bush, and she obviously sets that out then to try and rescue them. It's what I call a sensitive and delicate subject, yes, wrapped up in a fast-moving, hopefully exciting adventure story.
Okay, and this the book is available now. Where?
Yes. It's available on Amazon, on all marketplaces, in ebook and paperback.
Fantastic. So I look forward to reading it. Now let's look at solutions, Miss Angela, because I think we can all agree that this practice has very little, if not no advantages, more inconvenience and more harm than good. So what are the solutions? And this is something that you have dedicated your life in doing, which is seeking and finding solutions. Tell us about some steps that you are taking in your organization.
Well, I always use the word education. Education, more education, and more education is a key factor to spreading the word, to raising awareness, and to educating, to informing the people. I can give you a quick example of something that happened last year, spring, in Springfield, Virginia, when there was no law against FGM at the time in Virginia, and a neighbor, a woman from who attends my church, shared with me that she was outside in front of her door when she saw a little girl running down the street and being chased by the father who with a knife. And the little girl was yelling, "My father wants to cut off my genitals, my private parts." She immediately understood what the girl meant because she had listened, she had attended a seminar that I had conducted at the church a few years earlier. So she used her body to shield the girl from the father and told the father he was not going to get to the girl. He would have to go through her. And he was telling her, "It's our culture. You have to move out of the way. We practice it in my country, and we have to do it." And she called the police. The police showed up and didn't know what FGM was, had never heard of it before. Furthermore, there was no law against it at the time. The law went into effect on July 1st of last year. So that is just an example. After I heard that story, I thought about, well, there's a way to do to remedy this. Reach out to law enforcement, the local law enforcement, and all of the police chiefs and sheriffs in the various counties in the metro, Washington metro area, and share this experience with them and see what we can do about helping to educate the local police officers and detectives on this. And so that's what my organization is attempting to do now. We have gotten some, we have received some really positive responses from some of the local police chiefs and sheriffs in the metro area, and they will, we will be working with them in devising and a training program for the police officers and the detectives. So that is one thing we are doing. We're also, we started also a workshop, a monthly workshop where people, not only survivors, but it's open to the community, to the public. People can come and listen to various topics on FGM that are related to FGM. For example, how physical therapy can help heal FGM, and the mental health care of FGM survivors. So those are some of the things that we are doing, and it's only a few of the things. And of course, everybody knows that we hold our annual walk to end FGM every fall in October on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. It has attracted people from as far as Somaliland in Africa and Kenya and parts of Europe. So we are constantly looking for ways to help end this practice, not only in the United States, but also in various parts of the world.
And Ms. Angela, Ms. Lucinda, sorry about that. What do you see as some steps towards solution?
I think from my experience in traveling around Africa, to the extent I have, filming in deep rural areas and talking to people at grassroots level, that changing mindsets is very, very important, and it's going to take time. But they also have to see what the benefits are to them. And this might be very difficult because there are not too many benefits probably for the men. It's mainly for the women, and it's very much still a patriarchal society. Women do what the men tell them to do, and these traditions are very deeply rooted, and it's going to take time. I think if we can make it that it benefits them in some way, even if it's a monetary way, then there might be a better start. It's illegal in a lot of African countries, but that doesn't mean to say that the practice has stopped. It's certainly done behind closed doors. And sex is a taboo subject to talk about among Africans, and not forgetting the Asian countries that are also involved. It's very prevalent in the Middle East. I understand in Syria and Yemen, almost 100% of women suffer this. Yeah. To some extent. I mean, there are three different types of FGM, and the very worst is when the women are totally sewn up, basically. And it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to need a lot of enthusiasm on board and changing of mindsets. And I think possibly, although it's great to have the laws in place in Africa, I think maybe in the West, like Angela, hopefully my book will help. But again, the police force in UK, a few of them have been informed when parties, FGM parties, have been broken up. They don't know what it is. They have got no concept. So if we can even start by educating people who have moved to live in our countries possibly 2-3 generations ago and explain to them the dangers and the fact that the tradition is a bad tradition, then maybe we'll make progress.
Absolutely. We just have a few minutes left. A few seconds, actually. And Miss Angela, I'm going to leave it with you with your final words in terms of what you would like to see. I guess everyone wants to see the end of it, but just a couple of words, what you would like to see.
I would like to see more coverage from the media, not only in the U.S., but all over the world. We need more coverage from the media because the media has a great impact on the public.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lucinda E. Clark and Angela Peabody. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
And that's all the time we have today. Thanks to our listeners for joining us and tuning in to Health Chat every week. I'm your host, Lynn Ormudo in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day. And we thank our engineer, Pete.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after this.